And welcome everyone to another episode of All Things Trek. I'm Oren.
I'm still Grace.
I disagree. I mean, I'm David.
Ah! Catchphrase.
Ba-dum-psh.
So, I want to start the show off with a little bit of bad news and a little bit of good news. And the bad news is that there will not be a show next week, or at least not a live recording one. I'm looking at running one of the older ones as a rerun for fun and profit. But the good news is why there will not be a show.
Tell us.
Well, I was actually hoping you might tell us, Grace, because this is very relevant to your interests and what you're all about.
Well, I'm glad you asked, Oren. I'm going to be presenting at Geek Girl Con in Seattle. I'm going to be helping lead a panel on women in Trek. The theme this year is A Woman's Place is on the Bridge and how women in roles of authority are treated differently than men. I'm also going to be part of a panel on women in horror, but that's not Star Trek related. Except when it is.
There's Genesis, where Troy is a frog. That's sort of horror.
Troy.
Zombie Vulcans.
I consider Threshold to be pretty horror.
They can intersect, but that's separate from the main Star Trek involvement thing.
And of course, I will be in attendance, as I am also in Seattle, and I will be in the audience, probably not heckling. I'll probably be supportive, but we'll see.
Probably. You're going to stand up and start disagreeing with me.
Well, that would be David if he was there. But
it can be both.
So in addition to that, we also have an email, which I would like you to read, Grace, if you do not mind.
Do not mind at all. One moment. Dear Oren, Grace, and David, I enjoyed your recent episodes as always, except for the Stowe ones. I skipped those. Out of letter. Ouch. Ouch. Back to letter. I actually don't mind Carpenter Street all that much. At least it was entertaining. My least favorite Enterprise episode would have to be the one with the sexy Vulcan massage. Out of message again. Yeah, we agree with you, probably.
Unfortunately, yeah. There's more than one of those. That massage is not limited to one episode.
Because we just had to make the Vulcans kinky. Back to the email. I just wanted to address Oren's comment about fossil fuels. Archer and T'Pol described fossil fuels as running out in the 1990s. Oren remarked that the problem is that we are nowhere near running out, which will lead to catastrophic consequences for our climate. In fact, the situation is somewhere in between. We do have lots of fossil liquid fuels left. In fact, most precisely half as much as we did when we started. But they are getting more difficult and expensive to extract. Prices go up, availability goes down, and it doesn't matter so much that we have a lot left. Culture is drastically changed when it's a seller's market, and once it takes a barrel of energy to extract a barrel of energy, crude becomes obsolete. As you mentioned, this is not necessarily a bad thing for the climate, except that we have a lot of coal left, which is a great concern to people who like having the atmosphere the way it is. This was also mentioned, and I was curious and looked it up. According to Memory Alpha, the Andorians' antennae were mechanical, not CG, and each actor had their own puppeteer. Regards, WWSD. Thanks for writing in, at WWSD.
It's true. The title of the subject of this email was, "Trust me, I'm an environmental educator," which, you know, I'll certainly...
Damn it, Jim.
And so, for one thing, I think we may have to agree to disagree on what constitutes entertaining. I do not think I was entertained by Carpenter Street, but, you know, that is clearly a matter of personal
taste.
It
was supposed entertainment, and we were watching it.
We did watch it, I suppose.
That's us being entertained.
For a certain value of entertainment, I guess. Now,
it all depends on your personal definition of entertaining.
And, of course, what she says in the email about, you know, fossil fuels is correct. Although my understanding is that it's the issue of getting to them. It's one of those things where we have actually developed new and exciting ways of extracting fossil fuels that were before thought to not be worth extracting, because it was, you know, there's the whole ratio of if it takes you a barrel of oil worth of energy to extract a barrel of oil, it's not worth doing. But now we have these, you know, that's just, you know, good business sense. But now we have all these new and fancy technologies that let us get at that fossil fuel that, you know, for slightly less than one barrel, you know, it takes 90% of a barrel to get one barrel of crude. You know, and that's not an exact number. I just pulled that out. But, you know, things like the tar sands oil, and of course, this isn't oil, it's natural gas, but fracking is a relatively new technology that lets us get at gas pockets we didn't think we could get at. So it's,
but
you know,
let's establish that fracking is not without its risks. Just going out there to,
no, yeah,
you got to
no,
put that
I,
in there. You can't talk about fracking without talk about the environmental risk.
I was just drawing a distinction between fracking and crude oil, because they're different, but they're both bad, or at least they have very potential negative consequences, I should say.
Watch Gasland. It was a good movie.
So anyway, thank you for the email, WASD. Thank you for laying down the science.
And
Now,
thank you for helping correct us on the Andorian antennae. Penna, antennae? Is there a difference?
antennae, I think.
Well,
Antennae?
at that episode, I thought I remember thinking that they were mechanical because the way they moved and that they looked. CG, I think if they were CG, they would have been more fluid and more active. So to me, I thought they were mechanical little device things under their wigs.
That just adds more to the point I was trying to make when we brought it up, though. Imagine how hard it is to like try and act dramatically when you've got these little mechanical whoozits wiggling around on your forehead. Just the challenge that that probably adds to it, and trying to keep serious.
I imagine that they're probably controlled by remote, but I find the idea hilarious of a puppeteer like hanging out behind the actor with a pair of strings, you know, just pulling on one
Like
to
there's a
make
guy
the.
just standing behind Jeffrey Combs with a pair of popsicle sticks.
Yeah, that's how I imagine it. I don't think that's how it actually works, but that will be the image in my mind for like the rest of my life.
We shall forever imagine it that way.
I just thought of like Jim Henson, the way they have the little remote control servos, and there's like a team huddled under the camera. It's just, I think they should do more of that.
You heard it here, folks. All Andorians are actually Muppets.
Are we sure Jeffrey Combs
Yay!
isn't a puppet?
Oh,
I'm
well,
just
there's a
saying
mental image.
he's just very versatile, you know? I don't know if a normal human can has that kind of range.
We just don't know. Listeners, we need more information on this.
I'll ask him next time I see him at a con. Be like, "Mr. Combs, are you a puppet?" He'll be like, "The hell are you talking about?"
Who is
So,
this guy?
anyway, so
And
the
how
main
did you get in
topic.
my hotel room?
Think you overestimate my skills of infiltration. Now, our main topic for today is reoccurring villains, because we've talked about reoccurring characters before, and we've talked about villains, but we have not combined the two explicitly, so now we're going to.
Five powers combined. They're a whole new conversation topic.
And of course, this, you know, to qualify for this, you have to be a bad guy who has, or bad girl, as the case may be, who has appeared in at le more than one episode, at least two. For most of these, I try to go with three, but sometimes it's pretty slim pickings. And you have to, you know, have, and I'm not just talking about like a species here. I'm talking about specific characters. So like, you know, Tomalak
We're not
counts,
getting racist here.
right, but not the Romulans. Like we've talked about those. We've talked about that in a different subject. And I was trying to find one, and TOS, as is well known for not being a very continuous show, it's very, very episodic. It actually really only has one, and as much as it pains me to say it, that one reoccurring villain is Harry Mudd.
Harry Mudd, the true Shakespearean character of the whole experience, who goes and sells sexy women and tribbles.
And gets stuck on a planet full of his androids of his ex-wife, I think. Not dead wife, ex-wife. Because
Good
that's the
Lord.
second. Have you seen that episode, Grace?
No, and I'm kind of glad I haven't right now.
Okay, so I, Mudd is the second episode with Harry Mudd in it. And some people really like Mudd. Like, I know a lot of people who think Mudd is hilarious. I can't stand him. I
I
don't.
like mud.
You like Mudd? Like the character, or just like actual Mudd? Like, you know, like walking through a
There's a
mud puddle?
difference, but not
Because
much of one.
that can be fun.
Why do I have to choose?
So, but the of most people remember Mudd's Women. That's sort of the his famous episode. It's the one where he has the ladies who he's trying to sell, who gives them a beauty drug, but apparently it was all on the inside. And like being self-confident can completely change your like the appearance of your face and your bone
You
structure.
get it,
And
kids? There's a moral here. Yeah, it also changes the lighting of the room you're in, apparently.
yeah, it gets you to have good lighting instead of bad lighting, and completely changes your makeup. And so, self-confidence very powerful is what we learned in that episode. And then the other episode that he's in is called I, Mudd, which is unfortunately not a new Apple Beauty product. I would probably buy that.
That would be pretty excellent.
But no, it's a they go to a planet, or actually they are forced to go to a planet by an android who snuck on board their ship, and then they get trapped there and. Harry Mudd is there, and he's like theoretically the
Oh,
king of this planet,
yay.
because all of the ro he got trapped there, and like all these robots are like theoretically doing what he says, but they're all his like nagging ex-wife, so he hates them and thinks he's in hell. It's a very odd episode.
You gotta wonder what, from what we've actually seen of this character, he thinks about women. Because we see him trying to peddle women and telling them that they're only worth something when they're beautiful. And then we see him trapped on a, quote, hell planet with his ex-wife. So that, it doesn't really endear him to you.
No, he's definitely, like, again, I don't care for him. That's one reason I don't particularly care for him. The other reason is he just seems to be below the TOS crew's weight class.
Definitely, yeah.
And that's not a crack about his physical weight. I mean that, like, as a, I do a lot of role-playing games, and whenever I look at a story, one of the things I think about is it really feels like these characters should just be able to make short work of this guy. Like in the first in Mud's
It's
Women,
like, why
there
are you still here?
Yeah, in Mud's Women, there's like literally a scene where he outlines his dastardly plan, like within earshot of a red shirt, like of a Starfleet crew member who apparently just doesn't report it to the captain. And it's like part of that, I guess, is just bad direction because they forgot to, or bad storyboarding, they forgot to like make it so that he could have that conversation where the guard couldn't hear it. But that's what they did. He's just like monologuing about his evil plan and like literally twirling his mustache.
It was a soliloquy. That means he can say everything, but no one can hear it for some reason.
Well,
Law of Shakespeare.
the red shirt was just distracted thinking about the upcoming landing party that he's probably going to die on.
He's mentally writing out his will.
I mean, not to say that being a red shirt on the Enterprise is not a terrifying experience, like every day of your life. Speaking of which, you all should go check out the Red Shirt Diaries, excellent YouTube series. We had them on a couple episodes ago, and they're on I think their fourth episode now. I have to check.
It is fun and definitely worth checking out.
So anyway, that's Harry Mudd. I don't really know how much more I have to say about Harry Mudd other than he was popular. Like people liked him when he came on, so that was why they brought him back for like a
You can't
second
really
time.
understand why.
Well, but here's my take on it. When I was a kid watching in the 70s, I wasn't thinking about, issues of sexism, racism, economic, well, all that kind of, stuff that you think about later as an adult. As a kid, I just liked him because he was colorful. He was like, bombastic. He was an interesting, colorful, character. Then as time went on, I started, obviously, like we've said, he's not a choir boy, he's not a Boy Scout, all that, whatever other good metaphors for good
You're making him
people,
sound
whatever.
like Batman now, though.
But here's the thing, I looked at
I
it
have the
as.
mud. Sorry.
Yes!
Go ahead. I'm sorry. I apologize. That was rude
Mud
of me.
begins. Mud rises.
Now, obviously, he's like, sleazy, slimy, swarmy, all these other things, but that's what makes him a cool, like a fun, crazy, cool kid. Obviously, not trying to sell women. That's a whole other, right? That's an issue with the writers, I think, more than, the persona of the personality and the mannerisms, etc., of Harry Mudd. But the thing I thought of it was, a lot of times throughout all of Star Trek, TOS, all the way through, we're looking at Starfleet and the Federation, which is basically kind of a governmental-ish type agency, corporation, or whatever you want to call it. And then we see the Klingons and the Romulans and other military people. And then every now and then we see diplomats, right? Whether they're working for whatever, again, another government agency, whatever. So then we get very few times where we see people like Harry Mudd or well, I'm blanking on his name. The one from
Cyrano Jones.
well, him exact. He's another good example.
Cyrano Jones.
And then like
The outrageous O'Connor.
Yeah,
No,
exactly.
no,
Now,
no.
but here's the thing: the execution of it may not have always been so great because a lot of, I mean, for outrageous Okono, he was in season one, and there's always season one has issues if they haven't always developed the characters, the writers aren't in their groove or whatever. But to me, it's like the thing I liked about Star Wars and some other sci-fi is that you see the governments, you see the militaries, but there's always going to be the civilians, the non-government worker, military type people, the people out there just trying to make a living, trying to get, survive on one hand, but also trying to get one up, get profit. And so that's the way I've always wanted to see more of that in Star Trek, whether it's non-Federation, non-Starfleet humans on Earth, like what are they doing? But all the way to like space truckers, people that are just
Like
doing
in
the
that one fan series we reviewed, whose name
Right,
escapes me. Aurora?
yeah,
yeah,
Aurora.
Aurora.
Yeah.
Now, see, because then if you look at that, like, slice of, like, civilian, non-official, whatever, population, there's going to be the people that are just going through their, you know, like, regular people. But you're going to get the people that are trying to be the ones that are shysters and trying to get, you know, like, the snake oil salesman from the Old West. And so that's what I liked about those characters is that, and the also the idea that you're Starfleet, right? You're a captain, you're on a crew, you're on a ship. You're not always going to be dealing with another government or diplomats or, you know, fighting an enemy on, you know, with torpedoes and phasers. Sometimes you got to deal with the riffraff. And to me, obviously I would have liked it to be written better in terms of, like, you know, not anything involving, like, racism or slavery or sexism or, you know, destroying an environment for no reason or all that type of stuff. But just as a character, I think Harry Mudd is a fun character. And if he was given better stories from the writers in terms of a plot, you know, the story of the episode, I think it could have been a better character. And he is popular enough that we do see Harry Mudd characters cosplay at Star Trek Las Vegas and other places. But
why not Cyrano Jones? Why not use him? Yeah, I mean, he's more likable.
Yeah, that's another thing. I haven't really seen Cyrano Jones, but that's like a... Now, and it, like you said, he's trying to scheme and plot and, you know, make profit, and he's talking with his plan in front of the red shirt. That also reminds me of, like, not everybody who wants to get one up on the world or get ahead, they're not always brilliant strategizers or tacticians. And, you know, look at all the people who
there's
try
some
to
noobs you got to deal with. Yeah,
well, look at all the people in real life that try to rob a bank or try to do a, you know, loan insurance fraud or whatever. And then even politicians trying to get elected, like, all these people have plans that they think this is a great plan, if it'll work, and then it falls apart in front of them. So
Harry Mudd is supposed to be the waspinator of this universe.
Funny story, I was just listening to a BBC program about, like, a Greek bank robber who has not once but twice escaped from prison via helicopter. You know,
ooh,
just thinking
wow.
about criminal. Yeah,
does he have access to that many helicopters?
You know, it's not entirely clear, but that's a bit of a side note.
Who keeps giving him access to helicopters?
It's a problem with the Greek economic model. Too many surplus helicopters for criminals. But now, David, I totally get what you're saying. I actually really also enjoy seeing civilians in Star Trek, and even, like, you know, kind of, you know, snake oil salesman, as you put it. And I like Cyrano Jones. I think Cyrano Jones works. The issue that I have with Mudd is that they put him in direct opposition to the main characters, who are the command crew of the Federation flagship. And they didn't do that with Cyrano Jones, even though Cyrano Jones was originally supposed to be Harry Mudd, and they only changed it because they couldn't get the actor back. They in Trouble with Tribbles with Cyrano Jones, Cyrano Jones is not the primary antagonist. He's a foil, right? Like, he's just there to give Kirk a hard time. And that's fine. I don't have a problem with that. I think that works great. It's that in the Mudd episodes, Mudd is the primary antagonist. And he is the one who is providing opposition, and it just seems like he is not up to the challenge. And he would have made a great villain for, like, a team of, like, junior officers, right? Like, if TOS ever did those stories, if TOS ever did a Lower Decks story.
Or if, like, Chekhov ever had to take someone down on his own.
Yeah, totally. You know, that would have worked fine. It was just, with him providing, like, he just didn't seem worthy to oppose the main characters. It just seemed like they should have made short work of him.
Well,
like that, yeah.
That could have gone back to the execution and, you know, small moments in episodes that, so when they're there, then, you know, give an insight into the character or their motivation or their backstory. When there's, like, small little moments that could almost be taken out, but they're there, I think that adds a lot to, you know, stories and episodes. I think he was missing some of those because growing up, like, when I was younger, I always had the vibe of, like, he had money. He wasn't, like, poor, right? He had means. He was a schemer. So to me, I thought, you know, even if there wasn't the little tidbit scenes here and there to give him the credit or the, you know, the worth or however you want, the weight you want to put it, it seemed to me like only him and, if you know, others of his same style, but only those type of people would get to be on the Enterprise dealing with the you know, the crew and the captains and all that, whereas other small-time criminals or, you know, schemers, plotters, they would have never even set foot on the Enterprise. But because he is who he is and he can, you know, plot and scheme and that he would able to like finagle himself into these, you know, situations and then interactions with certain, you know, the crew or whatever. But I don't know. Obviously, it's a flawed character as a person, a personality, and also, you know, the writing could have been better just because of, you know, if it was written today, I don't think they would have done some of the same stuff they did back then. But I always liked Harry Mudd. He was just a fun, and it was kind of like the that phrase, like the person you love to hate. Like, it's like he wasn't a good guy, but you know, that's why he was colorful, and you know, that's why I liked him.
Yeah, that's fair enough. And I certainly don't need my villains to be good people. I mean, that would kind of defeat the point of being villains, right? I didn't want to give that impression. And I agree, David, it's an issue with execution that I have, really, more than concept with Harry Mudd. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, the only thing that it's like, when I look at him, he's not the kind of person that, like, he wants to destroy stars and blow up planets. He's not trying to, like, you know, take down the Federation he's just out for himself, trying to, you know.
He's a good example of a villain versus an antagonist. He is antagonistic, but not necessarily a villain.
Or at least I think he could have been. I think he would have done better.
There's definitely potential there, yeah.
Yeah, like, you know, basically that's what Cyrano Jones was. Cyrano Jones was a foil, I think is the term you're looking for, Grace, is a character who is not on the main character's side, but is also not the primary, you know, big bad, as it were.
Okay, now we're pretty far into it, and it's not just the Harry Mudd show. I got a question though. You said Mudd was like the one person you could think of as like a reoccurring villain. I have a question about whether this character qualifies or not. What about Khan?
That's what I was thinking also.
Because he shows up in TOS episode Space Seed, and he doesn't show up again in the series. But of course, we get the film where he reoccurs and comes back as Khan in The Wrath of Khan. So would that qualify, or would you think, well, he's only in one episode of the actual series, so, like...
Well, you task me, David. obviously Khan is a great villain. He arguably the best villain that Star Trek has ever had. I wasn't originally going to discuss him just because, like, you could argue the technicalities of it, but mainly we've talked about Khan a lot.
Khan is kind of one of the iconic villains of Star Trek, and there isn't a lot more that we can say that we haven't said already.
And I mean, Khan is a very interesting villain, and like I mostly only have good things to say about Khan. If there's one bad thing I have to say about Khan, it's I didn't buy the way that Marla MacGyver's like fell for him in Space Seed. Like that was very unbelievable to me when I watched it, and maybe sign of the times, maybe back then it was just assumed that that was how your female characters would work, is that they would just fall in love like so blindly with this attractive male that they meet that they will do literally anything for them. So,
you know, like ladies do.
Well, right. In this case, he wasn't just like some dreamboat, handsome, pretty face.
He was Ricardo Montalban, so close.
He had that going for him, but obviously they overdid it and it wasn't exactly 100% realistic. But my always take on it was that he was, his confidence and charisma, you know, was a big part of it, more than just, you know, oh, you're, you know, a dashing, handsome man and, you know, now I want you, I must have you, whatever. It was like the fact that he was, you know, regal, almost regal, but like, you know, and the girls go for the bad boy, you know, I don't always get that, but it's like he had the confidence, the charisma, and the manner. But I didn't necessarily mean to discuss Khan, it's just whether or not he would qualify as a reoccurring villain in Star Trek, you know, the original series. But so basically I'm trying to think, like Trelane, he was awesome, but he was only in one episode. Like there's so many cool villains or characters, but yeah, I guess not many reoccurred in the series.
I mean, I think there are only like two reoccurring, there are very, very few reoccurring characters, period, right?
We pretty much have the main cast, and that's about it.
Yeah, there's, like, Mudd, there's a couple of reoccurring red shirts, there's Dr. Mbanga, who appears in two episodes, and, like, so really, TOS is slim pickings for us this episode, even though we did spend 20 minutes talking about Harry Mudd.
He's so talkable, I guess. Or rippable, that's probably more accurate.
Harry Mudd did also reappear in the animated series, if I remember right.
Cyrano Jones did.
Yeah,
No,
maybe.
Mud was in there too. Mud and Cyrano Jones, different episodes. It's been forever since I've seen that animated episode, though. I wasn't planning to bring it up because I honestly cannot remember what Mud was doing in that episode. But once you, it's interesting because once you get to TNG, you have Tomalak, and then you have a handful of others who appeared like twice. And Tomalak is interesting because everyone remembers Tomalak, but he was actually only in three episodes, and he had very little screen time. And four, if you count the episode where he appeared as a hologram. Because he,
Let's
uh.
count it. Let's count it.
Okay, so because he appears in the first episode, he's in The Enemy, when he's just a face on the view screen, right? He's taunting. He and Picard are exchanging words. Then he appears in The Defector. Again, he's in that episode even less. He is in there for like the last scene, basically. And then he appears as a holodeck or a holocaract. He's not actually a hologram, but he's like an illusion in that episode where Riker is being like tricked by an alien kid into like trying to stay with him. I don't remember the name of that
Right, the one
episode.
trying to convince him that he's his dad.
Yeah,
That's a weird one.
wants Riker to be his real dad.
I'm a
That's
real
also.
boy.
That's also the one where they call back to the like first season holodeck episode with that lady that Riker got, into.
Minuet.
Yeah, Minuet. Kind of an odd episode. And then Tomalak is in All Good Things for about, 30 seconds, when he and Picard are like, "We'll both send a ship to the neutral zone to check out this anomaly," and then he never shows up. Maybe he like got close and took a look at that anomaly and was like, "Well, nope, I'm not going near that," and he just turned around. But all the same, I really like Tomalak. Like, I think maybe it has a lot to do with the actor, the sadly passed away Andrea, like it's Andrea Katsulis. I don't even know how to say that last name. Katsulis?
Yeah,
Katsulis?
that's the way I thought. And he was a great character on Babylon 5. And then in this case, I always liked him, even though he didn't have a tons of screen time. But it's like his obviously going back to the actor, but the character itself was an interesting character that was in, memorable moments, pivotal scenarios. And it was, in a way, one of the few named Romulans that we saw that we did see more than once. Instead of just like, "Oh, you're a Romulan bad guy, we must defeat you," like he's actually a player in the game. So yeah, I always liked Tomalak.
Yeah, and in the Enemy, the first episode he shows up in, there's a distinct like he has a very interesting like sort of dual purpose because on the one hand he's clearly trying to like do damage control politically and trying to put the blame for this whole situation on the Federation, and he's playing the political game, but he also clearly wants to recover his missing officer. Like at least that's my interpretation. I don't think that his concern for his missing men is affected. Like I think he honestly is trying to get them back and is very upset when he finds out that one of them has died. So, and that's more depth than you get out of your Alien of the Week, right? Like he has a real motivation that we can identify with. Or at least that's how it seemed to me.
And No, I feel you. I feel you.
then again, already in the chat room, they've picked up on the next one, another one.
A favorite
Right.
of everyone's.
Well, there's Sela. Sela's kind of a tricky character. I'd actually forgotten that she shows up in first in Mind's Eye when we hear
Yeah.
her voice, but we don't see her. I'd
We
honestly
see her
forgotten.
silhouette.
Yeah. And Mind's Eye is the episode where Geordi gets mind controlled by the Romulans. They put like, a little doohickey in his brain and makes him all brainwashed and like do some.
Murdery.
Yeah, and it's a good episode. I like it.
Wasn't it just that they tinkered with his visor and that was giving him signals
That was how
Something
they
like that.
delivered the commands. But they made it pretty clear that they actually had a very what they did was their actual process was they used his implants for that he has for the visor to basically channel images and sensations directly into his brain, and that was how they brainwashed him. And like he couldn't like look away or close his eyes because it was like just going directly into his visual, processing center, which is pretty horrible when you think about that. That is, so he underwent some really dark stuff in that episode. And then the visor was how they actually communicated their specific commands when they were like, "We need you to spill a drink on O'Brien. We need you to shoot that Klingon dude." Fun and happy stuff.
Go and play a game of solitaire, why don't you?
So that's when we first see Sela, but like really, she's really just sort of a mysterious villain. And then they, I think it's, what is it? Is it Redemption when she comes back a second time? It's the one where the Duras are trying to overthrow Gowron and the Romulans are supporting them, because that's how the Romulans do.
Yeah, I
And
think that's Redemption, the two-parter, one and two.
right,
That's it.
and we see her again in Unification, which is the episode with Spock, and that's the last time we see her, I think, in the series. And
And we
I
get to
don't.
see Data take her down.
Yes, that does happen. And I think that it's fair to say that Sela is not remembered as fondly as Tomalak, despite having roughly the same amount of screen time. And I'm not. I think it has partly to do with the fact that they decided to make her Yar's, like, daughter, and we've talked about before how completely messed up that is, and how, like, terrible that result. You know, it's really sad when Yar was like, I want to go with the Enterprise C so that I can have, like, you know, an honorable death, as it were. It's like, nope, that's not what happened at all. And it's like, oh, that makes me really sad. But we've discussed that before. I think part of it is just that the fact they made her Tasha Yar's daughter, and then they never fully addressed it. Like,
I
she
think
was
they just wanted
there.
to bring back Denise Crosby, and who wouldn't?
Yeah, but did they need to have that backstory? Like, honestly, let's try to imagine if they had not put that backstory in and they just had Denise Crosby playing a Romulan. Like,
She could
would
have been
that
a
have.
clone or something, like Picard's clone.
Did
I
they.
think
Oh.
it I
Go
think
ahead,
it's
David.
mainly be I think it's mainly because she was a primary character on the Enterprise crew. If it was just like, another one of the working actors, the actors that they've used in as different aliens, I don't think they would have done it. But because she is Denise Crosby and so recognizable, and the fact that some people might be like, hey, what's going on here? But I mean, obviously they could have used a different actress, but why do that when Denise wants to come back? And it was an interesting, weird backstory. And for Tasha personally, obviously, like you said, it's not the greatest outcome. But at the same time, she didn't just go, do the thing and die. She had to go deal with all this afterwards. But in a way, it was still good because Yar helped, the whole situation with the Enterprise and the Khitomer and all that. So she still had a hand in doing, the good part of it. But and it to me, it almost is like a continuation of her early story. I was going to say history, the backstory, or but the way she had to deal with what she was growing up. But to me, it seemed like a bookend of that. Like, it wasn't somebody that never had to deal with hardship, now having, or poverty, all that, freedom fighter, what, all the stuff she had to deal with before. It seemed like now is echoed in how she ended up. It's not like somebody that was just a goody two shoes, never had had a posh life all their life, and then all of a sudden this happens to them. So I don't know if that's any, better or good, but to me that's just how I took it. It's like, oh, look, even at the end she's still dealing with, messed up stuff like she did when she was younger.
It's just never easy for her. To the very end, it's difficult.
Well, see, that's actually part of my problem with it, is that so that you have Tasha Yar, her original death in Skin of Evil, right? And that is basically a red shirt death,
I
where.
loved the disdain in your voice when you said that episode title.
Yeah, well, ugh. And so they kill her with very little thought. It doesn't really matter. They have this weird, creepy eulogy scene, which is really more her talking about the other characters than anyone actually talking about her. So that was terrible.
And it takes
And.
place in an old Windows background.
Yeah, that's a problem with that screensaver. And so then we have Yesterday's Enterprise, which was an attempt by the new writing team to sort of redeem that death, right? They were like, that was a terrible way for that character to go. Here's something that provides you a bit more closure. And you could argue that, like, oh, well, is it that's not how it works in real life. In real life, people don't have heroic deaths. And it's like, yeah, but that if you go down that route, you're going to start getting into all these different story conventions, and it doesn't work like that in real life either. So if you're gonna, you can't, that's not a blank check, right? Like, what was the issue was that the death in Skin of Evil was not satisfying, so they were like, here, we will give you a more satisfying death for the character of Tasha Yar in Yesterday's Enterprise. Then we have Sela, who shows up and very casually mentions, nope, that's not how it happened. It was actually this terrible story of forced marriage and like childbirth and then death by betrayal, and we don't really, go into that. There's no exam. It's no, just keep going. Just nothing to see here.
You gotta wonder though, Cela's a bad guy. She's very clearly a bad guy. Maybe that was her just messing with them, to try and rub salt in the wound of the whole Tasha Yar scenario.
Or exaggerating it.
We never know. We don't really, we have an unreliable storyteller in this situation. So that's a possibility.
Another thing that I thought of, the first time I saw it and then subsequent viewings or whatever was the way, okay, Denise Crosby is coming back, which is awesome, but for the in the universe for the crew, they're thinking, okay, this is Tasha's daughter and she's on the Romulan side, but maybe we could sway her, maybe there's a good bet, a good side to this, maybe we could redeem her, whatever. I mean, that's all, not stated in the episode, but could be the possible. You get the glimpse, the idea of that when they're like, oh, it's Tasha's daughter. When they first talk to her and she tells that story, I took that as, the writers and also the character just right off the bat saying, forget any type of me being your friend or your ally or turning me over to your side. Like, she's full on Romulan enough to betray, because if she just said, oh, I was Tasha's daughter and I just we all both escaped and she died and I joined the Romulans, maybe Picard or Troy would like try to work their talking magic and sway her, convince her to well, you could have a new life and join us and all that, whatever. Whereas right off the bat they're just like cutting that away, saying nope, I betrayed him, I'm full on Romulan, like don't expect or hope that I'm going to be on your side at all. To me, that's kind of the way it was, so it's sad for Troy, for a Riar. But from a writing point and just in the course of it, it's like you could almost get the sense that the crew was like, well, that sucks because we're never going to have, almost like before where it's like obviously they want Data back. They're not going to get Data back, at least at one point. But they have before. So it's like a remnant or echo or something of Data. They could have maybe thought, well, we're going to get that with, it's not Yar, but it's Yar's daughter, maybe. But it's like, nope, I'm full on Romulan. I betrayed and helped, the demise of Yar. So I don't know. It was an interesting take on it, the way they all crafted it out and the way the scenario.
Well, all right. So here, let me look at that. So that is an interesting point you bring up, is it's like, well, their natural urge would be, well, maybe we can bring her to our side, maybe we can, redeem her or whatever, because she's the daughter of our former crewmate. And she's like, no, that's not gonna happen. But if they weren't going to try, why bring that up? Like, it'd be one thing if they tried to do something like that and then it didn't work, right? That would be dramatically interesting. This is kind of like if they just revealed casually that Riker killed Picard's father, and then it just never came up. Like, this is
I'm
a
just trying to imagine the scenario in which that would have happened, and wow.
Like,
what was it, Anbo Jitsu match went wrong or...
yeah, it was a terrible sporting accident or
wine
something.
tasting gone horribly, horribly wrong.
Like, they just drop this huge plot element and then they just refuse to pick it up. It's like, it'd be one thing if they picked it up and then took it to a conclusion other than the expected happy ending, right? Like, I don't have a problem with sad endings, but they just didn't. It was just like, nope, we introduced that, but that is not a story we are interested in. And it's like, well, why did you make her Tasha Yar's daughter if you weren't going to do anything with it? Like,
Well, I
again,
mean,
you know.
it's an establishing the story of the character, but I mean, I wouldn't necessarily want to see an episode of Tasha being abused and dealing with all that. But knowing that that is what brought this character to the to where we have this new character, that's like, oh, that sucks and that's messed up. But at the same time, though, like I in the episode, they don't really try to sway her over. But you could kind of get a glimpse, an idea that maybe they might want to or whatever. But I think it was also like simultaneously to show the crew, she ain't gonna be your friend, but also for the viewer, for the audience, like wondering, like, oh, are they setting it up that now, she's gonna defect from the Romulans and we'll have Yar quote unquote back because it's gonna be Denise, but now she's a Romulan, but she's now like part of the Enterprise. Like, none of that's gonna happen right off the bat. But then it also kind of lets you know you can't trust her. It's not like, there's different characters that are kind of an enemy, kind of a villain, but then at times they're like an uneasy but ally, like they'll help you for this one example or this one scenario because it helps them, but after that they're back to being bad, you know, the enemy. That's never going to happen with her. Like right off the bat, it shows you can't trust her. She's not somebody you could really deal with in a, you know, even neutral kind of way. Like she's going to be against you the whole time.
Well, but see, that's the thing, right? Is like, you're right. That is what they did, but they condensed it all down into like basically two exchanges of dialogue, and they missed a golden opportunity to develop the Sela character because we don't really know anything about Sela. Which is odd, because Sela's backstory is that she's a half-human in a xenophobic authoritarian culture. She must have a very interesting backstory and have, like, all of these motivations, but we don't know any of them. Like, with Tomalak... Sorry, go ahead, Grace.
I think the problem is that there was a very interesting arc with Sela planned out, but at the same time, when you bring in a character and say, this is our character, she's the daughter of, you know, a character we killed off a while back, you kind of got to sell that. And you've got to be able to sell that with the backstory, and people would wonder right off the bat what their deal was, and that didn't leave them a lot of room to slowly build the character, and which is a shame, because that could have been some great potential for some more dramatic reveals and what have you.
Yeah, and but sort of like just to finish off my original point, Tasha, with Tomalak, when they first introduced Tomalak, we had a case of, we knew what his motivation was. His motivation was to rescue his men. Like, that was his motivation. And then he also had this distrust of the Federation and this desire to come out ahead in this chess game that the Romulans and the Federation are playing. But we had a primary motivation for him. Then he shows up a second time in The Defector, and that is sort of unfinished business, right? Like, he feels that the Enterprise got the better of him in the first episode with them. And he shows up there to try to get the better of them, and he's thwarted for a second time. And then, really, the third and fourth times he's brought back, it doesn't really matter. So those two moments are what really matter. With Sela, we never get that. With Sela, we don't have a motivation for her other than following orders of being a Romulan. And then when we finally had an opportunity, which was in Unification, she's overshadowed by Spock. Like, Spock is in that episode, so the entire, like, dramatic arc is going to be about Spock. We had an opportunity, and like instead we get Sela giving like a line about how she hates Vulcans, and like, why do you hate Vulcans? Like, what happened to make you specifically hate Vulcans? So I feel like with Sela there is just a parade of missed opportunities, and if they could have adjusted our expectations by not giving her the backstory of being Yar's daughter, and I don't know if they could still have used Denise Crosby for that. I can't say. I'd like to think so. There are plenty of actors on Star Trek who have played multiple characters. Now, granted, maybe they can't do that with Romulan because the makeup isn't like, you know, significant enough. I'm not sure.
It really varies. They sometimes go full Romulan with like the eyebrows and stuff. Sometimes just pointy ears.
Yeah, that's true. So, all right, I think I have ranted about Sela enough. There's a couple more TNG villains we can finish off. We might have to make this a two-parter because we're coming up at the end on the end of an hour, and we haven't even gotten to DS9 or Voyager yet.
Or Enterprise.
Ooh.
Well, so there's already in the chat room, people are saying, you know, don't forget Dukat, and in a way, he spans more than just, you know, the one series, obviously, going from TNG to over to DS9. But before we get to Dukat, or if that's like a bridge between the two parts, one of the ones that was not, I didn't see on the show note list or whatever, but I thought only appeared twice and maybe wasn't the best villain or the smartest tactician or whatever, you know, for that, but had strong character and, you know, pivotal, important things going on, was Damon Bach. Do you remember Damon Bach and his two episodes?
Yeah. Damon Bach. So Damon.
There's
Bach
not much to remember.
Well Damon Bach.
He sure started messing with Picard, so it's like it's not just like, you know, I'm just a person that wants to be, you know, rich and I'm robbing banks. Like, he had a specific, you know, interest and interaction dealing with Picard, so that's like important when he's messing with the captain.
Well, Damon Bach, he first appears in The Battle, which is, in my opinion, one of the best episodes of Season 1, like, behind Conspiracy, basically, because Season 1 is kind of a train wreck, but The Battle is pretty good, I think, and He's sort of this. He's kind of an atypical Ferengi, as much as we had a typical Ferengi established at that point, in that he is out for revenge, even though there's no profit in revenge. And so that was interesting. It kind of was like it sort of established that the Ferengi also have this code that they live by, even if it's very different from the Federation code. And that was neat. I liked that. And everyone like the battle is, one of a very iconic episode. And then there's I don't even remember the name of the second one, which is in season 7. So like almost 7 years later, and it's the episode where he tries to trick Picard into thinking that this kid is Picard's son, so that he can kill this kid, and then Picard will be sad because his son is dead. Which is
Convoluted much.
well that that ties in the two it ties in his whole arc, because in the first episode it was the Battle of Maxia was with what the Picard on the Stargazer was going through, and during that Battle of Maxia Damon Bok's son was killed by by the hands of the Stargazer, and that's why in that episode he's like, oh, here's your Stargazer, I'm gonna give it back to you just because. But he's really messing with Picard's mind with what they call a thought maker, that big dome thing with lights inside. But so that he's trying to, he tricks Picard into thinking, I mean, Picard is actually on the Stargazer. He starts tricking him into thinking he's in the battle. So that's where we see, one shot Picard is just standing on a empty bridge, yelling at the screen. But then in the you flip to the, second shot, and you see it's like fire and sparks, and Picard's thinking. So that's the one thing that ties into the all the years later. He's still bent on, my son Picard is why I lost my son. So now I'm going to tinker with this other kid's DNA, make Picard think he's, the son, and then I could kill Picard's son. Because Picard didn't have a son, so he had to fabricate it,
So in theory, it was a slow build villainous thing that we just don't get to see.
Yeah, it's just such a funny episode, not intentionally. Like, no one remembers that season 7 episode with Damon Bok, or at least very few people do. But his first one is so iconic, and it was a very odd callback when I first saw it. I was like, wait, what is going on here? Do I know that dude? Is he? I think I've seen that Ferengi before. Who is that?
Well, and there, Damon Bok was played by two different actors. The first episode, and early on, was one actor, and then I
Oh,
think
really?
the second one, I think it was the second one that was played by, I'm forgetting his name right now. I just saw it a little bit ago, but basically the actor who did a lot of different roles on start throughout Star Trek, but he was Pentel in the Pirates of the Caribbean. But so yeah, it was two different actors, but still Damon Bok.
I
So
totally
I
did
thought.
not realize that was him.
I guess that explains why I didn't recognize him the second time. Just.
That'll do it, yeah.
Well, and they kind of make him look aged. You could kind of, I mean, it is long enough in between, but I'm not saying he is the greatest TNG villain, but he did, have a specific, interaction scenario with Picard. And that episode about, I forget the name of it also, but the one with where he's trying to convince Picard, there was just some interesting moments with that. Obviously they find out the DNA was tampered or whatever, but while Picard is still thinking that that guy is his son, he's like, 20, early 20s or whatever, like an adult guy now. There's some interesting moments with Picard trying to reconcile or, come to terms with, okay, this could be my son. And then even after they find out he's not, like the way Picard, he goes into like the father figure mentor role again, and he's like, build your life back up, why not have a second chance, and you could always change. And it was an interesting episode for Picard. But then I just thought, and it's also that we see even Damon Bok's crew is like, there's no profit in this, you're just out for revenge for yourself, and they take him out of out of command. And so that was a cool thing to show that it's not just like a monoculture of every Ferengi, just like, I want profit, I want profit. Like, there are those that go off on these tangents and have the emotional, psychological issues of, like, bent on revenge and all that.
Yeah, and that was, again, that was why I really liked the battle. I think Damon Bok is an example of one of those ideas that he succumbed to season 7 doldrums. Like, because there's a couple of episodes towards the end of season 7
No
where he
one went
really.
unaffected by it.
Yeah, it's like one of the season 7. It's not a bad season, but there are a couple of episodes towards the end where you're really like, man, you guys were tired when you were writing these. You were out of ideas, And they were like, let's bring back Damon Bock, and he'll make Picard think he has a son, and, like, that'll be fun. And so, like, I really
it's
like
a pretty
his first...
fun, convoluted villain plan. You gotta give it that.
Yeah, I
as
really
far
like...
as convoluted villain plans work.
I really like his first episode. Not as big a fan of his second one. Although, you know, one of the things that's funny about the battle is... So the backstory is that Picard, they had to abandon the Stargazer because it was, like, too badly damaged, right? But when they find it, like, when Damon Bock, like... gives it to them, it's in like perfect working order, and it's like, man, why did you guys abandon the ship? Everything seems fine,
but yet they still had to tow it for some reason.
Yeah, and maybe the implication is that the Ferengi repaired it, but you think they would have noticed that? I mean, like, why is this ship in like such good shape? When I left it, it was falling apart. What's going on here?
Another thing about this, just real quick, is that, like, obviously we got Q, we got like the big giant, you know, governmental sanctioned war between, you know, the Federation at war with the Klingons or dealing with the Borg. Along the way, being Picard, you might pick up these people that Picard doesn't view as a nemesis or a big threat enemy, but he's going to like step on toes and piss people off. And so you're going to, if you're the captain of the Enterprise and you're the flagship, you're going to have this trail behind you of people like, I must get him, you know, like Hogan, but Picard. And it's like people that are going to plot and scheme to try to go after you. And you're like, I got bigger fish to fry.
Yeah.
Did you just imply that there's a Hogan's Heroes Star Trek potential crossover there? Because I want to see the hell out of that.
So the last two villains that I have on my list for TNG are Lore and Moriarty. And
Yay.
They're both artificial beings, which is interesting. And they also, Lore is also noted for, he shows up once in Data Lore, and then he shows up again in the episode where Data, like, goes and sees Sung. So you have, like, Brent Spiner talking to Brent Spiner about Brent Spiner, who is also in the room.
Triple Brent Spiner, triple the fun.
That was Brothers, right? Cause
yeah, I think so.
The other half of that was where the boy got sick in the bubble, and the kid poisoned his kid, and he's like, Crusher.
The boy
story.
In the plastic bubble.
But yeah, Brothers was a good one.
And they got like really mad at that kid. And I was like, I think you guys are overreacting a little bit. I don't think this is as much as his fault as you guys are saying. But anyway,
and then we get Descent, right?
Yeah, the third time he shows up is in Descent. And so he only shows up again. He only shows up three times, but I think he does a very good job in, or at least as far as he can. Like, the Data lore is still kind of goofy because it's like season one, and suddenly they're like, Data can't use contractions, and it's like, he's been using them for this entire season. What are you talking about? It's like, oh well, just this
inconsistencies
week.
In the first season of TNG. What?
And then, you know, we have Shut Up Wesley, which everyone loves Shut Up Wesley, but it's really obnoxious because, like, why, you know, Data, like, Lore is clearly not acting like Data. He's acting super shifty when he's pretending to be Data, and for some reason Wesley is the only one who notices. And so, you know, that episode is, it's got some problems, but the crystalline entity is pretty cool. And then you have, and, you know, so Lore is, and then, like, Lore really comes into his own, I think, in Descent, like, with Lore leading the army of Borg. I thought that was pretty neat.
Yeah,
it was pretty cool as far as things that you could do with Lore.
Well, and it shows.
Also,
only
they
have...
brought Hugh back. Yay!
Oh yeah. Well, and that shows you could only he's only in three episodes, but it's like whether it's three or two, like what they do, what is actually going on, can be larger than whether if they were in six or seven or whatever. Like, you know, like obviously Dukat. I think in the next half we should talk about the two main villain type characters from TNG that would cross over to DS9 would be Dukat and Gowron. I think we could save those, but for Lore, he only was in three, but like, wow, those three episodes were like monumental and powerful. And then it's, you know, the whole arc, thinking of it from some of the backstory that we don't see and then what we see from the Data Lore on up, it's like Lore is definitely not to be trusted. He's like, I would say he qualifies to be like a villain, but at the same time it's like sad and, you know, almost sympathetic to his plight and the way things went for him, you know, the way in the past the colonies hated him, where Data was always like, oh, you're nice, everybody wants to be friends with Data. But, and then, yeah, definitely getting hooked up with the Borg, and we see, you know, implications of that afterwards.
And like the whole idea of, you know, giving Data what he wants, which is emotions. Like, I thought that was a neat power play by Lore. I appreciated that.
Oh,
and
definitely. Yeah.
like the ending sequence where Data is deactivating him, like that's very sad. That made me
It's
go,
emotional. It's kind of
oh.
hard to watch because we love Data and we're kind of used to seeing him as this kind of innocent character, and then he has to do the coup de grace on his own brother, sort of.
The coup de Gracie, I think is
I
it, you.
think we just found
Now,
my new Twitter name.
now, and then like then the last one I have on my list is, and I guess there might be a handful of others, but so there's Moriarty, right?
Moriarty is definitely a fun one.
Now I really, really feel for Moriarty. I honestly think that Moriarty is justified in doing what he did, because so imagine yourself from Moriarty's perspective. You are just created, like out of nothing, and as like you did not exist before until this super advanced group of people just made you by accident. Because that was what happened in Elementary Dear Data. Like they, you know, Geordi misspoke to the computer, and the computer accidentally created a fully self-aware program, which is kind of odd as an
Well,
implication,
and
but you know.
that's the other thing too. It's not just some spontaneously, you know, emergent life form, sentient thing. It's like he's that, but also in the guise of a villain. So everybody's going to look at him as Moriarty, not as this new person.
And so then there's but then like imagine from you know he even though he's in the guise of Moriarty, he's clearly not a bad guy. Like at the end of that episode, he straight up just gives them control of the Enterprise because they ask him to, and he's like, okay, here you go. And then they put him in storage for 6 years, maybe it's 5 years. It's a while. I think he comes back in season six, as I recall, so it might have been 5 years.
What I kind of like about that, though, with the Moriarty thing is he's kind of a minor villain, but they kind of make him the TNG equivalent of Khan in the sense that they have to be like, oh yeah, we screwed this up. We promised this guy a happy ending and we never gave it to him. That's kind of odd. I like how there's that kind of callback there.
Right. Of course, the situation with it's a little different because with Khan legitimately like tried to kill them all, and they were like, "We're putting you on this planet because we don't have anywhere else to put you. So, you know, good luck." And then circumstances beyond their control led to the planet being devastated and all that nonsense. But with Moriarty, it was like they were like, "Hey, yeah, we promised to help you because you're our responsibility. Like we invented, we created you, even if it was by accident." And then they just put him in storage for 5 years, and like they would not even like. Let's just run a holodeck for him, you know, so he can walk around and experience things. Not even, you know, they treat Vic Fontaine better than they treated this guy.
Well, the little it was weird because it was like a little box cube looking thing, and it was basically like a computer, you know, program running inside there, just no matter, right? It's not like the physical mass and matter of the holodeck, but when I was first watching it, I was like, okay, cool. They gave him his little, you know, non-physical holodeck thing. But then later on, I thought, if I remember it right, they're like, we'll put him in this little box, and we got some programs that he could, you know, keep himself interested in, and then they put him on the shelf. And I was thinking, like, how do they know that was enough for to keep? Because he's not just some little program; he's a sentient person, right? So what if you were stuck in a room with like, you know, a bunch of DVDs, like, right? And how many times did he rerun the same programs? They're like, this should keep him interested and occupied. But how do they really know? Like, that's a person, a thinking, you know, sentient life person now. And it's like, oh, we'll just stick him over here with some stuff to keep him occupied. It's like, I didn't, in retrospect, I don't know if that was the coolest thing to do. Like, why not transfer him over to Starfleet headquarters or something? But, you know, that's a whole other thing.
Well, I'd like to think that what happens is, since they have to continuously create new content for him to explore, that there's like a team of writers back at Starfleet Acad or like at Starfleet HQ who are like just constantly generating new adventures for Moriarty. That's my new theory. That's
That's
what I
what the
think happened.
creative writing class at Starfleet is, really.
But then, what if they start? They like, we got to keep him, you know, interested and excited, and so then they start thinking up elaborate stories and dangers and plots, and Moriarty's like, why is this stuff always happening to me? I just want to rest and live my
Damn,
life.
I may be a hologram that's gained sentience, but I get up to a lot of shenanigans. That kind of thing.
And then he's
Right,
like,
it's
man,
a.
that one time when I jet skied over a shark, that was really like that no, that was too much. I cannot accept that anymore.
Moriarty can now turn on a jukebox just by hitting it the right way.
So my point with all this is that I think that they did a disservice by Moriarty. I honestly think he deserved more than he got. I think that they should have really tried harder to reconcile with him, because, like, you know, he was the victim in all that. That's my take.
Definitely,
on
but even if you are doing, if you're like trying to grant a better ending to a character that's a holodeck character that gained sentience, you're doing a holodeck episode, and people watching know that. And there's only so much people are willing to emotionally invest in a holodeck episode, I think.
Well, you say that, but like the Doctor on Voyager is everybody's favorite character.
That's true. I felt like Voyager was kind of circumnavigating, but like rewriting that rule. The rule that a holodeck character is still a character.
Well, when they have sentience and autonomy and you know, they can contribute. So that would be an interesting thing. It's in one of the comics or novels. I don't know if it is or not, but that would be interesting to give Moriarty his own little mobile emitter and just have him be part of the world, you know, part of either the crew or at Starfleet or on just off on his own. But as long as he, you know, he'd have to have routine maintenance on his emitter in case something happens.
Yeah, or just like I said, give him his own holodeck to, you know, explore in. It's going to be odd. Like, if he ever discovers that he's in a computer program, like, that's
going to be so awkward for everyone involved.
Like, that's going to really, you know, mess you up, right? Because you're just like, at that point, it's like, even if they bring him out of it, he's never going to be able to trust that he's actually in the real world again.
Want to see Moriarty in the Matrix now.
So, just in this perfectly simulated reality for years, and then suddenly they're like, now you're in the real world. He's like, how do I know? How? That's Moriarty and his very, like, beautiful outlook on life. I think I'm going to call the show here for tonight, because we have like a whole other hit, like two, three shows worth of villains to discuss. And I think we'll make this a two-parter. That sound all right to you guys?
Yep.
Sounds reasonable to me.
And again,
besides,
like,
we can get more involved with some of the really juicy characters we got coming up.
Yeah, we got a hit on Dukat and Gowron and how they cross over from, they're so cool as a reoccurring that they cross over to another series, but then, you know, we could go from there.
Well,
the villains
Marco
are
Lamo.
Nice. We brought them in twice.
Marco Lamo does. Technically, he's a different character in TNG, even though he's Marco Lamo as Cardassian.
No, they got Dukat. First, he appears as Gul Masset, but they bring him in as Dukat. So if you look
are
up...
you sure?
Yeah.
In a TNG episode?
Yeah, he's that's where Dukat started, was TNG.
Huh. All right, well, I guess we'll look at that. We'll talk about that in 2 weeks, because next week we won't have an episode because of Geek Girl Con. But when we come
because
back...
Because I will be off achieving amazing things, like I do.
So when we come back, it will be to give you a recount of what happened in Geek Girl Con and to further discuss the recurring villains of Star Trek. But until then, this will be All Things Trek, signing off.